We're going to interrupt our regular programming to go live to the holy city of Mashhad here in Iran as a leader of the Islamic Revolution. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei addresses crowds in the nation on the occasion of Nowruz, the Persian New Year. Take a listen to what he's saying.
There were 72% of the, that was the 72% of the voter turnout in the election. This figure, when it comes to elections across the world, this stands very high, and it outstands other turnouts elsewhere in the world, and also among the elections held since the very beginning of the Islamic Revolution. This has been one of the highest numbers. What does that mean? Well, this high voter turnout and people's participation in the vote means that religious democracy has been institutionalized in the nation. It means that the establishment of the Islamic Republic has managed to institutionalize religious democracy in the country. This is a great thing. It should not be neglected. The country, on the course of centuries, there have been dictators ruling over this country. And then through the people's participation in the vote, after a lapse of 35 years since the early fervent moves of the early days of the Islamic Revolution, after 35 years, when it comes to election time, 72% of the electorate take part in the vote. This should be appreciated. So I'm addressing the youth and all those elements, think tanks and thinkers across the nation. This is a great blessing that should be appreciated. You should not be ungrateful. 5 years ago, a number of people were ungrateful regarding this great blessing. And at times we also hear that the election has sometimes been unhealthy. It's called unhealthy election. That's an echo and repeat of the words of the enemy. This is also being ungrateful. So democracy in the country has turned into a routine thing. So across the nation, in villages, rural and urban areas, the people feel committed to attend the polling stations. They go to the ballot boxes. 72% of the people of the electorate cast their ballots. This is an important thing. This figure is among high numbers in the world. So that's one point worth mentioning. Now, another point, if respected brothers and sisters pay attention to, is regarding the rally, the 22nd of Bahman, that should be February 11th. This year, all those who were watching this demonstration closely, they're those individuals who calculate the crowds by means of special cameras and different paraphernalia, they try to estimate the number of the people who take part. Now, all those who are doing such operations, they reported to us that the number of the ralliers, both in the Tehran demonstration and in other major cities, the number exceeded that of the previous years. So there is this point that I just want to make if you pay attention. So the number of ralliers in the 22nd of Bahman demonstration was both higher, and they were also more excited. I mean, the people's slogans, they were rich in content and fervor. And what's the reason for this? Now, analysts who embark on analyzing various issues have come to this understanding, which we also believe is true, that the reason is that this year there were factors instrumental in dictatorial and arrogant regimes. They used the rhetoric and language that was less courteous and more aggressive regarding the Iranian people, because negotiations had taken place regarding nuclear issues. So American politicians commented, they made their comments, that it's evident that the Iranian people have changed their mind, that they're dispensing with their principles. So, given the circumstances, the tone of the words they used against the Iranian people were discourteous and actually insulting. So the people heard all this, they got to know about these comments. So when the enemy showed its true color, or showed an image that's closer to its real nature, so the people got a bigger incentive and a better reason to take part. As people saw and realized that Americans are being impolite, and they say that the people have separated themselves from the establishment, they have distance from the establishment. So the people wanted to show in the 22nd of Bahman rally that when it comes to the Islamic establishment and the Islamic Republic of Iran and the banner of Islam that's been raised, they have all their heart to it. Well, this is demonstrative of the sensitivity on the part of our people and their zeal and fervor in the face of enmity and treacherous acts of the foes of the Islamic Republic and Iran. So this is the point that I wanted to make clear regarding the 22nd of Bahman demonstrations. Now, as for what's related to this year, I have made some notes here. I want to make certain points. So I'll try to make these points in a concise way in the chance that we have today, Friday. So we have to finish before the Friday prayers are held. So I'll try to make best use of this limited time and make these points. And if there are any points that are not mentioned, then hopefully they will be reflected and echoed by thinkers and those wise individuals who understand that about the true policies and approaches of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and they know what's happening on the ground. Hopefully, those points will be clarified and highlighted for the public opinion later on. So the points I want to make today, briefly, in one statement, is the fact that the people of Iran need to strengthen themselves. So that's the point I want to make. This is a word about national might and power. So I should tell our respected people that if a nation is not strong, if a nation is weak, then they will be oppressed. a person will be made against that nation. If a nation is not strong, then the bullying powers of the world will blackmail them. If they can, they will also insult that nation. If they are able, they will also step on those peoples and their rights. So this is the nature of the world that is run by materialistic ideology. So anybody who feels powerful
So they
will be act like a bullying power against those people, whether it's a nation or individuals. They will simply act like a bully. So there's a famous poet that says that death is a natural thing for a weak person. That's what the poetry says. So the strong person becomes weak and then dies. So they said that there's this placed chicken before a person who was not a herbivore and who was not carnivore, did not feed on flesh and red meat, and then they told the person. This is the poetry that he's reciting. Which means if you could defend yourself, if you felt enough power within yourself, then I wouldn't have dared, they wouldn't have dared behead you like this. This is what they told the chicken. Well, I don't recognize that poet or the person who's been quoted to have said this, but I do agree that in the world where, which is run and governed by materialistic ideology, so death is a natural thing for the weak. I recognize that. So if a nation does not rely on itself, does not get to know about itself, and does not strengthen itself, so other nations will make oppressions against them. So there are some nations who are far away from being strong and powerful. They have not much hope of creating that power that could enable them to confront the bullying powers of the world. But that's not true about our nation. We have lots of potentialities to become stronger. We have great capacities and potential to move that way. So our people have already moved on the course toward national power and dignity. So the roadmap, the general roadmap for the year, Iran calendar year 93. This is what I see in these two elements, which I said in the midst of the year. It's economy and culture with national resolve and jihadi-style management. So, for a nation to become stronger, it is not only translate into possessing advanced military hardware. Of course, military equipment is also needed, but it's not only through equipment and technology that people become stronger. So when I look around, there are three elements that I find. Two of which are the same points which I just conveyed in my message, economy and culture. Now, if these three elements are taken heed of, then a nation becomes strong. One of them is economy, the other being culture, and the third one being science, knowledge. Now regarding knowledge, in the course of 10-12 years, lots of things have been said, lots of comments have been made, and they were instrumental. And now, when it comes to knowledge and science, we are moving forward, we're making headways. Maybe later on I will make a reference of that. But when it comes to economy and culture, there is this more than conventional resolution that's needed for us to be able to turn the economy of the country in a way so that those from other side of the world would not be able to simply make a decision or through a meeting to impact our economy and our people's sustenance. This is in our hands. We need to do something about it. So this is what we call resistance economy, the policies of which were declared the last month, and with the ranking officials of the nation, I had meetings, and we discussed about it in details. And actually, authorities of the three branches of the government, who also were involved in the preparation of these policies, and they also were present in this preparation, they welcomed the idea and favored it, and so they would do it. So I want to tell our people about resistance economy, tell them a little about it, for people to hear directly from me about this kind of economy. So there are three questions regarding resistance economy. So this kind of economy is an economy which is resistant, which is resilient. So there are moves, there are turbulations, fluctuations across the world, and through the U.S. policies here and there, this economy is not affected. So this economy is based on the people. There are three questions regarding, or three issues regarding the resistance economy, which is actually a resistant economy. So these are the three questions I want to raise here. The first question being, what is resistance economy and what is not resistance economy? So what are the characteristics, the positive and negative characteristics of resistance economy? That's the first question. Now the second question is, if resistance economy that we're chanting slogans of, is it feasible, is that possible, or is it only a pipe dream? So that's the second question. Now the third question is, if realization of resistance economy is possible, what is needed to be done for that to materialize? So this is what I will reply, the questions I would apply about economy, and then we'll deal with the issue of culture, which I think is really important, and I will make certain points about that too. So the first question was, what is resistance? What is the nature of resistance? What falls within that category? What doesn't fall in that category? So in the first place, there is this scientific knowledge-based paradigm, which is proportionate to requirements in our nation. This is the positive aspect. And then it does not confine to our country only. That means that there are numerous countries that, given the social turbulations and upheavals, economic upheavals that we have been witnessing the past 22-23 decades, so those countries have started thinking about it proportionate to their own requirements and facts on the ground. Now, secondly, so the first point is that the move that we are making, this is also a preoccupation on the part of other nations. It does not belong to us only. That's the first point. Now, the second point is that this economy generates from within, it regenerates from inside. So it means from within the capacities and potentialities inside of Iran, that's what it starts to, the way it starts to move and to grow. So this is just like a sapling, like a young tree, the growth of which depends on our own country's requirements and conditions. So at the same time, it's not introvert. So that means that the resistance economy, it does not mean that our economy, we just restrict it or limit it to the country's boundaries itself. So it starts growing from within, but it moves outward. So it has interactions with world economies. So it faces economies of other countries powerfully. So it grows from inside, but it's not introvert. So I'm making these points because in the same fields, there are pens and tongues and brains of ill-wishers that are working. They will say that they want to limit the economy of the nation, they want to do this and that. There are a variety of analyses that they want to make in order to actually... This is a path of salvation. They want to distance people and officials from this path. So they make all these comments and analysis. So I want to elucidate this and clarify things for our people. So the third point is that it is based on the people. This resistance economy relies on, it's not on the axis of the government, it's not government based, it's people based. So it's popular, it's the will of the people, it's the investment of the people and their presence. So when we say it's not government run, it does not mean that government is not responsible or accountable. That's not true. The government is responsible for planning, for paving the way, for building capacities, and for guiding and contributing to the process. So economic activities, it should belong to the people and should be run by the people, but the government, as the body in charge, oversees everything, guides the course, and makes contribution. When there are those people who want to make abuses or embark in economic on corruption, the government should stop them. So when the people, at a time when they need help, the government will extend them help. So paving the way and setting the stage is then the job and the task of the government. It's the facilitator. It has a facilitator role. So the fourth point is that this economy, this is a knowledge-based economy, or science-based economy. So that means there are scientific progress and advances that this economy relies on. So economy is placed on the axis of science, but it does not mean that it only relates to scientists and academicians, and it's only the scientists who can play a role in the resistance economy. That's not the case either. Experiences, skills, experiences on the part of industrialists and those who possess industries, the skills and experiences of the laborers who are skilled and seasoned and experienced laborers, these can also be instrumental and influential and play a role in this economy. So when it's said that this is knowledge-based, it does not mean that experienced industrialists or farmers who have been for long years performed great tasks based on their experiences. It does not mean that they will not play a role, but they do play a big role. So the fifth point, it's justice-based. That means it does not only deal with the capitalist indices, it's also the or the GDP. It's not only these issues that the GDP grew, for example, this much, or the GDP. So we're not only talking about the growth of GDP or GDP that you see in the other capitalist systems, but when there is this gross domestic product of a nation, when it goes up very high, but there are some people who are dying of hunger in the same country. So this is not acceptable to us. So the index or yardstick of justice, economic justice, social justice in society is one major benchmark in this resistance economy. At the same time, it does not mean that scientific indices in the world are ignored. We will also pay attention to those, but on the basis of justice, we'll also perform other actions. So, justice does not mean sharing up poverty, but it means generating wealth and riches. It's the national riches that needs to be boosted. So the sixth point is that this resistance economy is the best way to solve economic issues of the nation. We have no doubt about it. But again, it does not translate into the fact that this only deals with the problems, some of them being because of sanctions, some of them because of the wrong policies. That's forever. So resistance economy means that strengthening the foundations of economy, both at the time of sanctions or in periods when there is no sanction, so such an economy will always flourish and go to the help of the people. So this is the first question that was replied. Now the second question was, if this economic program that we call resistance economy, is this something imaginary? Is this hallucination? I mean, do you wish to do that? Or is it really feasible? So the response is, no, it is absolutely practical. It's because of the capacities and potentialities that we have. This country possesses extraordinary capacities. I just want to cite a number of those potentialities. These are, we don't need some strange figures and statistical numbers. It's for everyone to access. One great potential is manpower. Now, manpower in our country is one of the greatest capacities and opportunities in our nation. We just have a young population that between 15 to 30 years of age. They constitute a big bulk and portion of the Iranian nation. This is a great capacity in itself. There are 10 million university graduates that we have, 10 million of our youths in the course of years have graduated from universities. So right now, as we speak, there are over 4 million university students that will graduate in the next few years. So, by this 4 million, our youth should know that this is 25 times as many as the university students at the end of the dictatorial regime of Iran before the revolution. So the population has grown twice as much, but the number of university students have been 25 times as many compared to the era before the revolution. So this is the number of university students and graduates that we have now. In addition, we have millions of skilled and experienced manpower. So the same people who reached out to the armed forces and went to their help during the imposed war, one of our problems was because our machinery didn't work, some of our centers and planes were bombed, and then our forces lacked the equipment they needed transportation. So a number of industrialists and skilled and experienced people, they headed from Tehran, they headed for other cities and towns. In the early days of the war, I witnessed that myself, and recently also a number of these people came to visit us. Those days they were young people, but now they're middle-aged, but they still have the same fervor and zeal. So they went to the battle fronts, they went to the very front ranks of the battle front. Some of them achieved martyrdom, and they made repairs, they made constructions, they made industrial constructions, those bridges that really helped our armed forces during the war, the vehicles, roads, they were all constructed and created by these experienced people. We have lots of these forces and manpower in this country. Maybe they are not university graduates, but they have skills and powers that sometimes act better than those highly graduated people. So we have these people both in the agriculture and in the industry. So another great potentiality is natural resources. So last year I talked about oil and gas here at the same venue, that the total reserves of oil and gas in the world is just ranked first. I mean, no country in the world possesses oil and gas accumulated. So from all the countries in the world, in the east and the west, the total of our oil and gas exceeds everyone else's. So now that I'm talking to you, the explorations we have had in the gas sector shows that even from the amount that we had in statistics last year, that amount, our gas resources, has even exceeded that amount we talked about last year. So this is the situation of our oil and gas resources and reserves. So the energy resources, they need light, they need heat, they need economic boom, and everything they have, they depends on oil and gas anywhere in the world. So this is what we have the most of in our country. In addition to this, we have mines, we have gold mines, we have rare minerals and metal mines that you see that are spread out across this nation. So we have iron ore, we have precious gems, we have a variety and a whole range of minerals and metals that are actually the mother industry. So this is what exists in Iran, which is a great capacity again. Another capacity is the geographic situation. There are 15 countries that we are a neighbor of. They're coming to this country. They're frequenting back and forth. We have transit routes. This is a great opportunity for any country. So we also have this opportunity in the south. We have free waters. In the north, we have the Caspian Sea. So among our neighbors, there are almost 370 million people as population of our neighboring countries. For an economic bloom of a nation, this number of neighbors and this population is a great opportunity. In addition to our own market, we also, that's a 75 million strong market. That's really a great and important market for any economy. So another potential that we have in the country is the software and hardware infrastructures. Software like the Article 44 of the Constitution or the 20-year vision plan, these are the right grounds for economy of the country. And also there are some other infrastructures, like the roads, dams, factories, and plants. These are among other capacities of the nation. Well, some people might say, if sanctions had not existed, you could have used these capacities, but because of sanctions, you cannot make use of these. But that's not true. That's wrong. In many other issues, during the sanctions, we managed to get hold of a very high points, like one generation of science generation in technology and industry. We had sanctions against us when it comes to knowledge and science. There are some advanced sciences of the day. Even today, the doors of scientific centers of the world are still closed, Taiwanian scientists and academics. But at the same time, we have made advances in nanotechnology, in nuclear technology, in stem cells, in defensive industry, and a drone and missile industry. We have made great advances. Why shouldn't we make progress and advance in the economy? In all those various areas we have managed, we have pulled off so many successes. In the field of economy, if we have our strong resolution, make up our mind and join hands, we will be able to bring a bloom to the economy. We shouldn't wait for the enemy as to see when they will lift the sanctions or when they will come to what agreement. Hell with it all. We should just look and see what we can do on our own part. No. Time for the third question and the reply. The third question was, for this great task, for this resistance economy, to materialize, what are the requirements for that? What needs to be done? I should say that briefly. In the first place, the officials need to support the production, national production. National production is the basis of progress of the economy. So authorities need to support national production. How? If they need legislation, they should make legislation. If it needs judicial contribution, they should do that. Sometimes there's executive support that's needed. They need to encourage, they need to take action, they need to take all these actions. So national production should be boosted. That's the first one. The second point, those who are in possession of capital and manpower, who are embarking on production, they too need to attach importance to national production in such a way that they need to raise productivity. So productivity. By productivity, we mean that the possibilities that we have on the ground, we need to make the best and optimal use. So the workers, they need to do their job carefully. That's what also God says. And so God's prophet's blessings, this is what the prophet actually has said and has been quoted as saying, that blessings of God will be bestowed on people who do the job right. They need to do the job in the right way. So the person who makes the investment, that person needs to try to make the best use of that money he has put to work. I mean, the production cost should be lessened and reduced. Some unwise acts and policies raise the cost of production, so productivity drops that way. Now, the third point, Possessors of capital in the country need to prefer production relevant jobs to other activities. So whether some individuals have had some money or capital and they could have used that capital in some ways to make great money, they didn't do that. They went to production. They said that we want to strengthen and boost the production in the country. This is the right thing to do. This is actually a kind of donation. It's just like alms. This is one of among the best practices. If you have some capital, be it small or big, they better put it to work in the production sector. Another point is that the people in all levels, they need to spread national production. What do you mean by that? That means what I just said a couple of years ago in the same place. I insisted on that, and some of the people, fortunately, did so and acted accordingly. But everyone needs to do so, and that is the consumption of domestic products. When you purchase an Iran-made products instead of a foreign-made one, then you have both generated employment and jobs and also push the Iranian laborer and worker to bring his skills and put it to work. When you use domestic products and goods, then the person, the producer or the designer, has some new ideas and novel plans. They will boost it. They will increase that. This is the national riches that you're adding. So in the past, during the dictatorial regime before revolution, they spread the word that you need to consume foreign-made products, and this is the culture they spread. They always ask, is it foreign-made or Iran-made? So if it was foreign-made, they would go for it. So this culture needs to be reversed. So we do not mean that there is a ban or it's forbidden to buy foreign-made goods, but purchasing Iran-made and domestically produced products is a need, a requirement for strengthening and making our economy resilient, and it impacts and influences every aspect in this country. So this should be taken heed of. This is the role of all the people. Here, like other parts of the world, the responsibility of officials, they're more responsible compared to others. There are so many wastages and waste such practices are because the people follow some examples, they call them. And so if there is a waste among the higher levels, then among the lower levels, among the people, you will see less waste. So preferring domestically produced goods is another preference. So let me just wrap things up and make a conclusion. So resistance economy means making the foundations of economy resilient and strong. This is among the duties of ours today, and everyone can play a role in that, both officials of the three branches of the government and the strata of the people, and all those who are have skills to work, and also those who possess capitals and thinkers. Everybody can play their own role. But what I said was a gist of what needed to be said. Now it's up to the thinkers and analysts to make their own analysis. Now the second part of my speech refers to culture. In one sentence, I should say that culture is even more important than economy. Why is that? It's because culture is the air that we breathe. So you have to breathe the air willy-nilly. If this air that you breathe is clean, then it has some effects on your body. If the air is polluted, then it has some other effects on your body. So the culture of a nation, just like the air, If it's clean air, then it has good results. Now, they're talking about domestic production. If you want the consumption of Iran-made goods need to be realized in the right way. So the culture of domestic production needs to be instilled in people's minds. So if we want the people not to waste, not to squander, then this should be, people should start to believe in this. So this is culture. This is what I mean by culture. By culture, we mean people's beliefs, people's faith, people's practices. So that's what the people deal with in their everyday life constantly. And this is what inspires people's deeds and words. So this is what culture means. So that's highly important. Socially speaking, if, for example, abiding by the law is culture, people need to respect the law. For example, that's a cultural aspect. Now, social contribution is culture. The formation of a family and marriage is culture. The number of children is part of the culture. All of this constitutes culture. So if such things, if the people's insights and the direction they're moving, if it's the right direction, then life and society will be in such a way that if, God forbid, they take another course, then we'll move another direction. So we will experience the same fate where the countries, where the foundation of family is destroyed and the lust-based practices are spread. Then we will experience the same fate. So the enemy is concentrating on culture more than any other area. The country is focusing on culture. And why is that? It's because of the great effect or influence that culture has. It's the target of the enemies in culture. And that is people's faith, people's beliefs. That's what the enemy has targeted. So the cultural authorities need to be careful regarding cultural encroachment, cultural invasion are really dangerous and hazardous. They need to be careful and vigilant. They need to be aware. We don't want to say that all cultural harms are the job of the outsiders. No, we are also to blame. Some cultural officials, some non-cultural officials, also doing the our jobs wrongly, and the shrinking from our duties. This is not only the job of the enemy. So the enemy's presence in cultural sphere, you cannot be also cannot be ignored either. So today, and since the very early days of the Islamic Revolution, the organizations have tried their utmost in order to make the people lose their belief in the foundations and bases of this revolution. This is cultural work. It's the people's faith that is being targeted, that's being invaded against. It's the people's heartfelt beliefs that are being targeted. So this, you cannot ignore this. So there might be a question posed here that says that, well, you need to say that the authorities need to be sensitive. How sensitive and careful should they be? Does this, when it comes to freedom, that's part of the slogans of freedom and is actually part of the pillars of the Islamic revolution, does this not negate that? And the answer is no. It has. It does not contradict freedom at all. Freedom is separate from, is not squandering and being libertinism. Freedom, which is a great divine blessing, in itself it has some rules. Without rules and confines, freedom has no meaning. If there are individuals inside the country that want to uproot and actually hurt the beliefs of our youth, you cannot sit idle and watch them because they're free to do that and let them do what they want to do. At the same time, if heroin and other kinds of addictive drugs and poisons that just destroy the families, they're the bane of the family if they want to see the individuals distribute such addictive drugs. You cannot just sit idle and impartial. You cannot just let some people to make use of art, to make use of freedom of expression or some other modes and means by making use of money to try to hurt and target the people's beliefs and ideas. So in the Islamic and revolutionary, they just want to make encroachments and invasions against the people's revolutionary and religious beliefs. So you cannot sit idle and say, this is freedom. There is no such freedom anywhere in the world, even in those countries where they claim of freedom. In those countries, when it comes to the red lines that they have, they are really strict. Now you see, in European countries, no one dares speak about or make comments about Holocaust. Now regarding Holocaust, that's not really clear if it's really happened or hasn't happened, or if it has really happened, how it has truly been. So making comments regarding Holocaust or even doubting Holocaust is one of the greatest sins. So they stop it, they arrest the person, they make prosecutions, and then they speak about freedom. So what is considered a red line for them? They stand against it with full force, and then how can they expect us to just do away with the red lines of a revolution and ideology and ignore them? So if they're an individual who targets the spirit of the national independence, there are some individuals talking about independence, they make fun of independence. They say this is a backward. What do you mean by independence? So when they want to theorize independence, they make fun and poke fun at independence, and they want to bring doubt to the hearts of the youth regarding a living independently. You cannot remain impartial. You need to do something. So the moral values and religious values, when they are being insulted against, when they make fun of Farsi language and they humiliate Iranian behavior, what's happened. We see such instances presently. There are some individuals who try to humiliate the national dignity of the Iranian youth. Then there are negative attributes that they make reference of. They say, look at the Europeans, look at the West and learn. They try to tolerate one another. We do not tolerate each other. Is this really the fact? On the streets, in European countries, in European capitals, just nowadays, not 20 years ago, not 50 years ago, these days, if there is a person who observes Islamic hijab, Islamic dress code, that person is being attacked by the youth. In broad daylight, they beat the woman who's wearing Islamic hijab, they injure her or they kill her, and no one dares ask why. Well, there's a person, for example, in another instance, because the person is not a national of that country, they set fire on him. Is this toleration? Is this tolerance? This is just happened a few months ago. There was an Iranian who young hooligans of a city in a European country, they beat this Iranian youth and then they put gasoline on him and they set fire on him, then just neighbors stand and watch and do nothing. Is this tolerance? So those who humiliate the Iranian nation, the Iranian approaches and practices and morals, those who try to humiliate the Islamic values and revolutionary values and the main principles when they and those who try to show that the foundation of family is something valueless. They say that marriage is something meaningless. These are the facts in our society. There are people who are doing such things and promoting these ideas. Those who are seeking promote seeking of pleasure as a value. Pleasure, enjoyment, this is the souvenir from the West. Anything which brings satisfaction and joy, well, sometimes they do this cautiously, sometimes they do it through narcotic drugs, sometimes through sexual desires, some by beating others. Anything which brings some satisfaction and joy to you, they say it's right to do. So those people who preach such things, you cannot sit idle and do nothing. Some people also spread libertinism, so we need to feel accountable and feel responsible. When it comes to cultural destruction, those who are destroying the culture, they do this. Instead of a national resolve, they try to promote doubt and hesitation among the people. So when the people, as long as the people does not have resolution, they cannot get anywhere. So to try to stir the people's resolve when it comes to issues that determine the fate of the nation, they try to shake up those foundations and beliefs. Instead of resolve, national resolve and confidence, they try to replace it with national humiliation. Instead of strong belief, they cast shadows of doubt and disbelief. Instead of work and resolution again, they replace it with lust and seeking of worldly pleasures. And these are the practices that are being made these days. Our cultural institutions and organizations need to carry out their duties in the face of all of these. Of course, some of these duties, some of them are responsive, defensive, and they both need to be done, both those we are responsible to do and those duties that have a defensive nature. So the cultural institutions and organizations of our country, both the government run organization and the non-government organizations, they should be careful that the media that are using the language of foreign media, they should not fear their propaganda. They do not need to regulate their approaches and behaviors according to them. So what's more important in my speech, I'm addressing the youth that are embarking on cultural activities and operations across the nation. They have started it on their own, and thank God such operations have expanded. In Tehran, for example, in some other cities and provinces, and here in Mashhad and elsewhere in Iran, our youths are doing cultural work, and on their own, they have their own incentive. They have done some really great things, and some of which we have been informed about. So they should push ahead with those operations to the best of their ability. Well, they should know that promotion of cultural activities among the revolutionary and youths will play a big role in the, has played a big role in the progress of this nation, in our steadfastness and resistance against the enemies of these people. It has played a role. In addition to these, the cultural centers, what do I mean by that? That means the scholars, academics, revolutionary thinkers, committed artists. They need to have this critical point of view regarding the cultural situation in the country, and they need to make warnings and make comments regarding the warnings. I think that they should be based on strong logic. They should be clearly stated. The right viewpoint should be expressed in the right way, and they should avoid making allegations and making a hue and cry by accusing these people of doing different things. I do not agree with those. I think that the whole revolutionary set in the country, the revolutionary elements in the country, you see a lot of them among our youths, among our thinkers and academics and how they graduated. The one is we have a large number of evolutionary elements. So these people can have a strong and logical basis. They can enter the stage and then make comments and criticisms, and they should raise these questions. The officials need to know about these things. Sometimes officials don't know what's happening deep among the layers of society, but that young person is there and he understands what's happening on the ground. So this is the jihadi management that I just mentioned, the national determination that I was referring to. So in the conclusion, I want to make another point to you, Iranian people. You should know that the facts of the international community will not move ahead based on Americans' intentions. Slogans of now what the global arrogance, what the global arrogance and the enemies of the Iranian people have been trying to realize, and in the global international community has not realized, and it will never realize, God willing. America has failed in Palestine. The map, the plan they had for Palestine, and they tried very hard, and that plan did not succeed and will never succeed, hopefully. They want the country of Palestine to turn into a Jewish state. That means Palestinians, be it Muslim or a Christian Palestinian, will not be possible to live in Palestine. They would just put an end to Palestine. This is what they have pursued, and they have tried very hard in these past years, but they were not able to do anything in Palestine. In Syria, they failed. In Iraq, they also came to no conclusion. In Afghanistan, in Pakistan, the designs they had, the goals they had were not material. As recently in Europe also you hear and see what's happening, that the plans of America have all failed. You should know that in our endeared country also, after 30 years of attempts that they made against this revolution and against our revolutionary people, all their attempts have failed. They got nowhere. So the signs is this participation of the people. They said expressly, stated that the key players in the U.S. administration, they announced this clearly, that the sanctions, we have created those sanctions and strengthened those sanctions in order to set these people against the Islamic establishment. Death to America, slogans of death to America. So this is what they clearly stated, that the sanctions are for the revolution to be uprooted, is that to set the people off against Islamic Islam. Now, what was the result? The result was last year there was an election held in Iran with high voter turnout. And on the 22nd of Bahman, February 11th, there was a demonstration that was staged even more at a wider scale and greater scale than any other demonstration in the previous years. And this is what I want to repeat time and again, that our youth should know that the future is yours, that your enemies are doomed to fail. And hopefully the Almighty God will Almighty God will hopefully bring you further successes and blessings and show you the way to salvation, and the heart of the Imam Mahdi will be pleased with us. May peace and blessings of God.
Well, that was the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, addressing people in the holy city of Mashhad on the occasion of Nowruz, the Persian New Year. A very quick wrap-up and highlights of his speech there. Now, let's not forget that this year has been declared as the year of economy and culture with national will and managerial jihad. Now, Ayatollah Khamenei started off his speech saying, outlining that the previous year was filled with the political epic that he had destined the nation for, saying that the presidential election last June and the high voter turnout shows that religious democracy has been institutionalized within the country. He said, after the lapse of 35 years since the victory of the Islamic Revolution, 72% voter turnout shows that this was a great blessing, an important victory, and that the people of Iran are resolute in the face of the enemy's plots, and democracy has become part and parcel of the Iranian way of life. Regarding the rallies that were held on February the 11th, 22nd of Bahman, where the Iranians celebrate the victory of the Islamic Revolution, he said, all estimates show that the numbers on the streets in major cities exceeded that of previous years. The atmosphere was more charged than ever before, because this year comments were made by certain politicians in the West that the Iranian people were dispensing with the ideals of the revolution. The people of Iran thus gave a crushing response to it. They had a greater incentive to come out on the streets and show their commitment to the banner of Islam and the Islamic Revolution. And then he went on to say that the might of the nation is extremely important. The people of Iran need to strengthen themselves. He said if a nation is not strong, it will be open to oppression. The bullying powers of the world will blackmail it. And those powers will also insult this nation and trample upon its rights. He said the Iranian nation has a great capacity to become stronger than it has ever been. And he emphasized that three elements can make a nation stronger: the economy, culture, and knowledge, or science and technology. He said knowledge, in the course of the last 10 to 12 years, Iran has been making great headway in that field. Economy and culture, he said that more resolve is needed to turn the economy of the country in a way that those in the other parts of the world cannot sit and make decisions that affect the economy of Iran. He said the answer to this is that of resistance economy. He highlighted the points of what this resistance economy actually entails, saying it is an economy that is resilient, that isn't subject to fluctuations and policies of the enemy, saying that it is a knowledge-based paradigm, not restricted to a single country. It is an economy that grows from within based on a nation's requirements and interests and then moves outwards to interact with the country, other countries' economies. He said it's also a people-based economy in which the government is responsible for guiding and planning, but the people are the ones that play the major role in directing and the growth of this economy. And also he highlighted that this economic system must be based on equity. The benchmark of this resistance economy must be economic justice. He said the best way to solve the economic problems of this country in the times of economic sanctions, in the time of mismanagement, or even at other times is resistance economy. He highlighted that Iran has all the potentials to implement such an economy, saying Iran has manpower, it has great resources, it has hardware and software infrastructure in place, put in position to give Iran the position of strength. Well, going on now, he also said those who think that Iran cannot make use of its resources due to sanctions are at fault, saying that Iran has made technological and scientific progress and despite the sanctions, and thus it will be able to do the same in the field of economy.